We made this.
Welcome to the TARDIS Crew, a Doctor Who podcast for the We Made This podcast network. I'm Baz Grand and I'm joined by my son Ben, my co-host in this adventure and the biggest Doctor Who fan this side of Gallifrey. How are you today, Ben?
Yeah, not bad. Looking forward to what we're discussing today.
Yes, so as we said at the end of our last episode, we were going to talk about the Ninth Doctor two-parter, Empty Child, Doctor Dances. We've put that back slightly. I think we've probably been sidetracked by new episodes of Stranger Things. So we will get around to watching it at some point, discussing it, but not quite yet. So we thought we'd jump ahead and talk about one of the other episodes we have planned, which is could be quite a fun topic, shouldn't it, Ben?
Yeah, it should be. Not just a bit light, fluffy, just a nice one to get back into things.
Absolutely, yeah. So today we're going to talk about the 10 one-off Doctor monsters and villains that we'd like to see return, you know, stuff that we know who've made an impact on us over the course of, well, our time watching the show, and of course over the almost 60 years of Doctor Who. There's been some really amazing villains, monsters that have appeared, and I think it'd be like quite cool to see some of them again. So so Ben and I, we have picked five monsters, villains or aliens each, and we're going to discuss discuss one by one and talk a bit about them.
Yes, indeed we are. And to make things a bit more fun, we have no idea what the others picked.
it should be a lot of fun. So, yeah, I mean, before we get into it, what makes a memorable alien or monster for you?
Either something like, it needs to leave an impact, whether it's like in a really good episode, so you tend to remember it, has a nice concept towards it, or it's something so stupid and badly done that it's just iconic.
Yeah, I think sometimes the silly ones can be just as memorable as the great ones as well. I mean, I like the ones that are scary. I mean, there's a reason, you know, Weeping Angels and the Vashnarada and the Silence, and that are all kind of really memorable ones for me, because I think they really make an impact. They really get into the crux of that kind of the hide behind the sofa mentality of Doctor Who monsters.
Which is kind of ironic when you think about it with the Silence, that they're memorable.
Absolutely, yeah. So, yeah, we're going to talk about some of the ones that have made an impact of us over the course of the show. We're going to, you know, we will be a little bit of a mix between kind of, I mean, it's all Doctor Who, but, you know, classic and modern Doctor Who, but really it's all Doctor Who, isn't it? It's just had a break in the middle. So, yeah, there'll be lots of very really good monsters and villains and aliens. You know, some monsters that aren't necessarily baddies, but, you know, have certainly made an impact too. So, I'm going to hand over to you, Ben, first. What is your pick for the a monster or alien that has appeared once in the show's history and you would like to see return?
I mean, a lot of these are just TV-based because they might have appeared in other media or stuff. Mm. But something I think would be quite cool is Axos.
Okay, from the Claws of Axos, a Third Doctor story.
Yes, because I know they've been in a comic with 11, they've had an audio with 6, and I think they've had a few more, but...
Well, I think we'll talk about it in the frame of the TV show, because...
Yeah, because
yeah, I mean,
otherwise it's going to limit options quite a bit.
Yeah, chances are, you know, if, Big Finish have done them, or they the comics, indeed. The books, yeah, so yeah, they're always going to be everywhere. So what is it about the Axons that you really like?
I think it's just the idea behind them, that like the Axonite, the ship, the creatures, it's all just one thing. It's all just Axos split into loads of different things. One creature that could conquer different areas of the world all at once. And the way they go about it, like in the Claws of Axos, delivering the Axonite, end world hunger, stuff like that. And then you get the cool, scary monster tendril thing.
Yeah.
Interesting, actually, considering the Crinoid costume is just Axos painted green.
It is.
Which I think... I kind of like that. It's quite brilliant.
Yeah. Well, it's a really good story, and they are quite memorable. I like there were different facets to it. I said the idea of the ship and the kind of the humanoid Axon Sea are all kind of part of the same thing. So that's why it's really cool. Yeah.
They are indeed.
So that probably goes nicely into my first choice.
Ooh,
so,
I wonder what this could be. I wonder if I may have mentioned it. What's your favourite story?
If you haven't listened to it yet, check it out. The Seeds of Doom. We have discussed The Seeds of Doom, my favourite Tom Baker story.
Now, so you want Harrison Chase back?
Harrison Chase and the Green Cathedral. That would be quite interesting.
To be fair, him being back would probably be quite fun.
I want Tobias Vaughn and Harrison Chase team up. That'd be quite fun.
Yes.
Two megalomaniac Bond villains in Doctor Who.
Amazing. And then bring in Salamander or something as well.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Except you can't anymore.
No.
Oh, well.
No. My first choice, unsurprisingly, probably is a crinoid, because I think you can do some really good stuff these days. I mean, I like the Autons, who obviously have been Doctor Who multiple times. I like the idea that maybe Doctor Who could do like kind of environmental issues or something, you know, the idea of, you know, industrialization and climate change and having this kind of this monster, which is basically vegetation fighting back. You know, it's inspired by Day of the Triffids. I think it was done really, really well in Seeds of Doom, this kind of increasing threat. I think the crinoid could be done really, really well in modern Doctor Who with, you know, with the kind of the stories that the show is trying to tell now, particularly, you know, done in a very effective way. It has to be handled correctly. You know, like, for example, you know, we've watched before, All 55 has a really great message. Do I think it was handled in the most effective way? Probably, no, it had handled pretty much with a sledgehammer at times. But I like the message it was trying to do. I think he was something very similar with the crinoid. If it's written well, I think the crinoid could be a really effective one because it is an unstoppable force. Because it possesses people. You've got a very kind of human threat, you know, the human characters that could be impacted by the crinoid. And just the sense of scale of it as well. Maybe show a planet that has been taken over by the crinoid. You know, we saw the impact to Earth. What about a human colony that's quickly been taken over? And how do you fight back against that as well?
And then you can also do the giant mass on top of the house, but actually with CGI this time, and it's not looking a bit eh. But yeah, like, I think Axos probably works similar with that as well, like the budget you can have, which is what a lot of these, I think, would be able to really handle these days.
Absolutely, yeah. So I think there'd be some really good stuff done there, you know, really interesting stories that could be told with the crinoid as well. Back to you there, Ben. What one sort of villain or alien springs to mind for you?
I think another one which, okay, its original appearance isn't very well regarded, but it's just a lot of fun. Like, they should have been New Who, and they almost were, but weren't. The Nymon.
Oh, the old Minotaur.
Yeah. Seriously, the God Complex, the Minotaur, is a distant relative of the Nymon, so why not make it the Nymon? Come on, you could have so done that.
In the name of the Second Scotland Empire.
No!
You are a liar and a coward. You shall die.
Mercy, Lord Nymon! I brought you the tribute!
Get out, everybody!
I like a good Minotaur. You know, doing something that's basically the inspiration of Theseus and the Minotaur, but using the Nymon, that'd be quite cool.
I mean, yeah, they've got the labyrinth and stuff in that story. I'm not sure if you've seen it.
I haven't. I've seen bits of it. I've seen clips of it. So yeah, it's one of the... Yeah. I always allow myself a few classic Doctor Who stories that I kind of will come back to. I've seen all the greats now. I appreciate Horman and Nymon. Isn't up there the greats of the Tom Baker stories? But I always... There's a few handful of classic stories left that I've got to watch, and I kind of like having something to watch. So I will get them all eventually, but unlike you, I've saved them a little bit longer, you know, and I like that I've got a Tom Baker or a John Pertwee still to watch. So I will get there.
Fair, but yeah, the Nymon, they could be done really good with the laser horns and the idea behind them. Even the costumes originally, while they weren't great, they certainly... R1, which maybe could be slightly modernised, but also kept quite similar. Plus, You maybe even could bring back Soldeed. How many Nymons have you seen today?
Okay, so you've gone another classic Doctor Who monster there. I'm going for something very modern, but it does have a bit of a connection to classic Who. I'm going with the Immortals from Can You Hear Me?
Okay.
Because while I think the episode wasn't the strongest, I think it certainly stood out a bit more memorable in the series 12 of Doctor Who. And I thought Ian Gelder, particularly as Zellin, was a really, really interesting, very atmospheric villain. And I thought it always felt to me like it only touched the tip of the iceberg. I thought the Immortals could be something much, much bigger. And I would like to sort of see them maybe as a recurring threat throughout Doctor Who.
In the same vein as like the Guardians or the Eternals from Enlightenment, which...
Well, that's what I was going to say. The Eternals, and they almost, I mean, there's also a suggestion that they are kind of linked to the Eternals.
So. Yeah, they are name dropped, like the Eternals, the Guardians, the Toymaker. Topical these days. they're all, like, referenced as, like, they're kind of in the same thing. Imagine, like, you just get all these Elder God things, and then you have, like, a series arc Civil War storyline between all the gods. That could be quite interesting.
Well, absolutely. I think the idea of these kind of Elder Gods who are so... So above, well, not just humanity, but all kind of the sentient races in the galaxy, you know, who are very dispassionate and removed, you know, almost psychopathic in their approach. There's no empathy to the younger races there. I've seen it done time again, you know, things like Babylon 5 is obviously my favourite sci-fi show. They do it with the kind of Vorlons in there as well, these kind of elder kind of god-like aliens as well. And I think it could be really interesting to have, because the thing about the Doctor... and the Time Lords, is they're kind of almost like gods themselves. And they are so powerful and so unstoppable, and particularly in like the Russell T. Davis era and Stephen Moffat eras, they're two of my favourite eras of the show, but they make the Doctor so important, so big, that I quite like when he goes back to being small and just his traveller going around the galaxy.
Which is kind of... I guess that is kind of where Stephen Moffat took the 11th Doctor.
Yeah.
Like, after he goes the naughty demigod and then realises, oh, I've gone a bit too fast, and then he quiets himself down again.
Yeah, definitely. So, the idea, the Doctor himself is almost a god. And while that's interesting, what happens if someone who is that much skill and experience and wisdom comes across something so much bigger than himself or herself or themselves as well. So I think the idea of these kind of elder gods, these immortals, who, you know, have a plan that basically put everything at risk could be really powerful. And I thought actually Ian Gale was so good as Zellid. I wanted so much more out of that story. I thought we were just getting to the heart of it, and it didn't go far enough for me. So I would really like to see more of that. And... you know, this tie to the Celestials as well from Enlightenment being one of my favourite. Eternals, from Enlightenment. The Eternals, who are from Enlightenment, my favourite Fifth Doctor story as well. So I like the idea of these kind of really huge godlike figures. What havoc could they create? I think that would be really interesting. You know, it's really showing the Doctor out of his depth against these kind of characters. You know, aren't as impossible force like the Daleks. Or the Cybermen. Something a bit more, can be more deeper, richer characterization as well. So yeah, that springs to mind. I was thinking about some of the modern stuff as well, and obviously it ties to the Eternals as well. So yeah, I think there's going to be some... I'd love to see more of that.
And yeah, I agree, their powers and stuff, like in his original appearance, and only so far, the Toymaker, like, just turns the Doctor invisible, and then, like, there's the theory with the 60th, maybe the Toymaker's done something to make him go back to David Tennant or whatever.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Well, that's it. We talked about in our last episode the 60th anniversary rumours, and we talked about, is Neil Patrick Harris playing the Toymaker, who could be almost being immortal himself. So, yeah, be interesting to see. What about for you? What's your third choice, then?
I originally had the Willen written down, but then I'm thinking about it, what else could work? And I'm torn between two here, the Rutans and the Fendal.
Oh, two good choices.
Because the Rutans, again, you've only seen once, although they were originally going to be in the Colin Baker era, because they're in one of the Lost stories with him and the Sontarans, and it could lend nicely to doing Sontarans versus Rutans on screen. Plus, these days, You don't have, like, the green blob coming up the stairs of the lighthouse. You could actually have the giant green CGI jellyfish floating through space.
Yeah.
Towards Ontaran spaceships with the TARDIS in the middle. And that could really work.
Yeah. Well, aren't the Ootas all supposed to be shapeshifters as well?
They are indeed, yes.
So you can have two things. You can have the kind of the pure Ootan form, and you can have, you know, we do it with the Zygons. And I think it was great they brought the Zygons back, actually, because the idea of kind of body snatchers vibe with people being replaced is a great story, great narrative tool. So something with the Centaurs as well, because I think the idea I always thought there's this big Ootan Centauran war out there that's going on. We've never seen it. I would love to see that on screen. And I think it will give a new aspect of the Centaurs. I think we've seen the Centaurs try to attack Earth so many times. Yeah,
Most recently in Flux as well, where they essentially succeed in Flux as well.
Well, they do.
Now give the Ootans turn.
Well, exactly. What happens if you see the Centaurans properly on the back foot because of the Ootans? You know, the idea, these are shape-shifting blobs of green jelly. What can they do to the Centaurans? I want to see that. I really want to see this. You know, yeah, I completely agree. Ootans will be a fantastic choice.
It's like why I actually recommend that Lost story. Big Finish. I'm talking about that again. How unexpected. But yeah, the first Ontarans in the Lost Stories range, it does have Ontarans versus Ootans in it, which is quite cool and does more Ontaran mythology stuff. But yeah, it was good of, I think it was Terrence Dix who wrote Horror of Fangok. Him or Robert Holmes, but I think it was Terrence. To actually bring the Ootans in. Like, actually go, well, okay, let's see the other one. And, like, they look on screen, oh, it's just a giant green jellyfish blob coming up the stairs. But, no, actually, if you think about it, by the end of that story, all the Psychos are dead. The Ootan kills them all.
Well, absolutely.
And that's just one as well. It's got the capability, which there is potential to see more of.
Yeah, it was Terrence Dix, by the way. But yeah, I think the idea, I mean, Horror Fangok is a fantastic story. I think I'd like to cover, actually, on this podcast. You know, one of the many, many Tom Bakers probably would discuss. But it's a, you know, really great piece of horror and very, very claustrophobic. And the Ootan is an unstoppable force. And yeah, I'd love to see more of that. So I definitely agree with that one. It's a really, really good choice.
Before I, like, want to cover the Fendal, shall we go over to one of your...
Well, yeah, actually, so I am going to... Another one I've talked about in the past as well. Draconians.
I see one of your Earth soldiers who attacked my palace and killed my people.
Joe, can you still hear that sound?
Yes, it's fading. It's almost gone.
Your Majesty, I beg of you, please, look again.
Why do we delay? Destroy him!
Wait! He has spoken the truth.
And again, it's a bit like the Ootans, actually. There's this huge presence of galaxy. The Centaurans and Ootans are this kind of ongoing battle in the stars between the Centaurans and Ootans. I want to see some of that. Same with Draconians. Frontier in Space, again, one of my favourite Third Doctor stories. It has the Draconians with this massive galactic power on to rival Earth. And it's a great Cold War story between the two of them, with the Master kind of pulling the strings and obviously leading the Daleks as well. It's a really, really, really good. I think it's probably my favourite from that season, actually. They look fantastic. You know, there's a great, they kind of, they're such a great presence. The look is great. They're kind of arrogant as well. Their rivalry with Earth. You know, the fact is they were in this Cold War, and you've never seen the Draconians again on screen as a kind of rival to humanity. I want to see humanity go out to the stars and come into contact with the Draconians. What happens if war does break out? What happens? Are they able to live in peace? We've touched upon different future human empires, but I want to see basically what happens before. What happens after Frontier in Space? What happens to the Draconians again?
Or what happens when they first encounter Draconians?
Yeah, exactly.
Stuff. And John Pertwee himself was saying, like, Draconians were his favourite monsters that he faced, and they look really good. Like, that's a design, even back then in the early 70s, you don't really need to change it.
No. Cause
it's there, it's timeless, it's just...
Yeah, Big Finish did a very recent story sequel to the Frontier in Space, which I think was really good.
Yeah, they did, Conspiracy in Space.
Yeah.
Interesting
Yeah. So again, Big Fish, Draconian, all this, but yeah, I want to see it on TV. I want to see what the Draconians like now. What were they like when humans first met them? What happens after Frontier in Space? You know, do the Draconians become this dominant power? You know, are they a threat to Earth? Do they forge peace? Do they fight together against things like the Daleks or Cybermen or whatever else? You know, I want to see. I think there's so much rich potential in Draconians as not just a one-off appearance, but a recurring presence in the show. You could spend time going to that part of history two or three times. Draconians could pop up two or three times in different time periods. I think there's some really great material to work from there.
Yeah, exactly. Again, with RTD coming back, why not make the Draconians the RTD2 equivalent of the Shadow Proclamation? Because they kept popping up and being referenced all the time, then have the Draconian Empire as this version. Or even, you could do pretty much a direct sequel to Frontier in Space with the Doctor recognising that where he left things off, it all got a bit hasty and he just had to go. So he comes back to see, well, did the negotiations work? Did that actually lead to prosperity? Or did it accidentally lead to all-out war, like the human race was almost destroyed or something by the Draconian war fleets?
Definitely no. So no, absolutely. I definitely, they're my number one choice to come back as a monster, because they're not even a monster as an alien. They're not even proper villains. You know, there's a Cold War thing going on between Earth, but they're never outright the villains. They're not in the same way that Daleks or Cybermen are. You know, they have the same kind of moral high ground and the same strength and power as humanity. You could have humans as the bad guys in a story with Draconians. That'd be quite interesting too. So
yeah,
there's so much to do with them. I want to see them back. I think that they're a must for me.
Yeah. And then you could also, if you wanted, with making them villains, do the obligatory split off faction version of them who actually want to cause war. So, quickly touching upon the Fendal then, I know Big Finish did a sequel to it with the Eighth Doctor a few years ago, and I know RTD himself has also expressed interest in doing a Fendal sequel back in his original run, so the possibility of seeing Shutagawa's Doctor versus the Fendal, I think it's probably one of the most possible ones that we could get here, because, I mean, if RTD still had ideas left over, he never did, and he's come back... Why not do them? The Fendal as well. Again, a bit like the Immortals and stuff. It's this just terrifying nightmare force. And like, you can get all the sort of satanic cult ritual imagery through it.
Yeah.
As well. And the design. You can make it CGI it a bit, make it look a bit better. But even then, it still did look really alien.
Absolutely, yeah. When I think it's Thea gets possessed by the by the Fendal, it's a fantastic look. It's really great. It's very, very striking. Yeah, Image of the Fendal is probably my, actually even more so than the Horror Fan Rock, Image of the Fendal is my favourite of that season of Doctor Who as well. It's a really, really effective gothic horror story. It's interesting that when Doctor Who moved away from Hinchcliffe and kind of moved out of the gothic horror phase, then we get Horror Fan Rock and Image of Fendal in the same season, which are both really, really good gothic horror stories.
Yeah,
I think, love them.
Yeah, I think they're like the last remnants of that and last good go until State of Decay gets dragged out of the cupboard a few seasons later, which was originally slated for season 15 as well.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, there's so much you could do with the Fendal. And I know, actually, I think Big Finish did a Torchwood with it.
They did a really good, yeah. It's quite mature one. I know you haven't listened to it. It's quite mature, but yeah, they do some really interesting stuff. They really place the kind of darkness and depravity of humanity as well, and how the Fendal is manipulating that as well. It's a story with Gwenin. It's quite a grown up story, but it's really dark and really twisted. I think it was really, really effectively done. I think the Fendal, what's really good about the Fendal is that it's basically is like the nature of evil. It's like having Fenric back. Or something like that. You know, you can play the idea of evil and how it kind of manipulates and controls and lays hidden and kind of gets resurrected through humans. And there's some really great material there as well. So I think the Fendal is a really, really effective monster. And I agree. I think it'd be another really good one to bring back in Doctor Who.
Just the idea of shooting out with facing all these villains actually is...
So far, we've got the Axons.
Or Axos, because it's all one creature.
Yeah, we've got the Axos, We've got the Crinoid.
We have Nymon.
We have Immortals.
Rutans, Fendal, and...
And the Draconians. So yeah, yes. Some, we've got quite a few then. So my kind of fourth choice then, I'm going to go for the most memorable thing from my childhood. I did think about Fenric, but Fenric and Fendal, they're kind of quite similar, I think, work.
I think I know what you might be
about
I'm
going to go for the cheetah people. Oh. I love the cheetah people.
I wasn't expecting that. I thought you were about to lean into the haemivore route, but...
Yeah, no, the haemivore would be an interesting one, but no.
Yeah, they could be cool.
I love the cheetah people. I mean, I know they look a little bit naff, but the image of the cheetah people on horseback, it's the one little bit I remember from my childhood, and... I always enjoy survival a lot, and I want to, you know, do it with today's effects. They've had cat people in the Rusty Devils era before, haven't they?
A side note with this, I wonder if this was intentional with Chibnall or if it wasn't. But War of the Sontarans mirrors the cheetah people on the horseback.
It does, doesn't
like
it?
Like, yeah. You get the Sontarans on the horse,
yeah.
And they actually wanted to ride the horses. So yeah. Good on them.
Absolutely. I don't know what you, because the idea is that people essentially get corrupted and get turned into cheetah people like themselves.
Yeah.
So there's a bit of kind of that body possession thing going on as well. So I think that they got the crinoid as well, a very different way. So it's not just they look great and they're very fierce, but you could have the idea of someone being possessed and controlled as well. So I think the cheetah people, they look a little bit naff, but I love them anyway. I think with modern special effects, I think the cheetah people would be a really, really kind of fun, updated monster to bring back to Doctor Who.
Yeah, like I'm saying with the Nymon earlier, just thought you could also actually go a bit body horror-y with the cheetah people. And like the slow transformation of someone, or like you have a half-human, half-cheetah hybrid person who's like in... eternal agonizing pain. I'm just going a bit dark now.
Yeah, you never see. I mean, again, I know you haven't seen this, but the thing that springs to mind for me is something akin to American Wealth in London when the main guy transforms into Wealth. It's done in the 80s, and it's the most horrific, painful looking thing, but it's brilliantly, brilliantly done. And doing something where you saw a bit with the glowing eyes and stuff, but you never really saw people properly transforming into cheetah people in survival. I think you can go some really, really, really great body horror storytelling with them and have people possess as well. So, yeah, I love the cheetah people. And yes, they're a little bit naff, but I would love to have them back on Doc 2. I think they could be really, really fun. So what's your final pick then?
There are a few I could go for here, like Pteroleptils or Vervoids, or at one point I thought the Nightmare Man from Set of Jane Adventures could be cool. But... This is not conventional. It's one a lot of fans would groan at. It's infamous and iconic, whether that's a bad reason, who knows. It's a story that was both possibly a masterpiece, also high on drugs at the same time. But, and I know other media's done this, but why not go back to the web planet? Bring back the Zarbi and the
Minoptera. Oh, you're being about the Zarbi.
Yeah, and the Minoptera? I'm still not sure quite how you say
Minoptera.
That. But yeah, like, update it slightly so you don't have Zarbi bumping into the camera. Keep the sort of Vaseline-looking effect to the planet and just do a full-on sequel to the web planet with modern-day effects.
I would love to see what the Minoptera. They're the kind of the butterfly people, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. And the ant people, the Zarbi, would look like on model screen, because they're people giant ant costumes. It's not great.
I know. There is one outtake. Well, I say outtake. I think it's in episode 2, I want to say, where a person in Zarbi costume runs forward and bumps into the camera and actually shakes it. But because of the time constraints of recording back then, they couldn't refilm that. So that's in the episode.
Yeah, it's a long six-part, that one.
Yeah, and there's the rumour of, like, they smeared Vaseline over the camera to achieve the effect, which I think's been disproven. And I know, maybe, okay, if we did a sequel, cut down on the beep, beep, bloop, bloop for... the whole time, although it wouldn't be a six-parter length, which would be nice. Unless RTD decided, let's do like another Fluxing 6-hour-long episodes on the web planet.
Oh my God.
And we increase the beeps.
Oh, right. Okay. And this is the point where people switch up and go, what the hell are these people talking about?
If they're still here after I picked Time Lash as our first story to look at on this podcast.
Well, that is very, very true. I think we went in with the level that we go at from the word go. So if you were, Time Lash, I want to listen to that, and you kept listening, then thank you for sticking with us.
But yeah, I mean, genuinely though, I think there are things you could do with it. As I said, update them slightly, reduce the beeps. But the whole idea of the web planet, go and explore that a bit more. Like, we don't need the animus. Yeah, animus here this time. Although I think the animus is, again, meant to be like one of the elder, ancient ones, beings, a bit like the nesting consciousness and stuff. I think they're related, so right. Make that what you will. Thing that controls the autons and the thing that was in the web planet. Brothers. but there is potential there, I feel, to do more with it. And I know, again, as with apparently every story on the planet, Big Finish did do a sequel with the Fifth Doctor. I haven't not listened to it. I don't know how it goes, but I think the web planet's definitely a story and setting that writers tend to look at and go, oh yeah, that. Yeah, we're steering away from that.
Well, the web planet has ambition. I'll give it that.
Yeah, 1965, children's TV, and you give them that. I mean, it was their second season about midway through, and they attempted that. So, you know, kudos to them for that.
Yeah, absolutely. I have no desire to see the Zabi or the Mantropa again, but at the same time, I'll be morbidly curious at how they would look. Yeah, but then I pick Cheetah People, and people aren't always a fan of that. So, I don't know. We'll see. Maybe we'll see giant ant people on Doctor Who once again.
Maybe do it as like a half an hour comic relief special or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Or make it the big bad season finale. The Zabi have been destroying the universe. They've been manipulating events that led to the death of the Doctor's companion. They're the ones who have the Master in their thrall. It's all the Zabi.
Right, I'm gonna try and reclaim a bit of credibility on this podcast now with my final choice.
Hey, I co-run this with you. There was never credibility.
Possibly. Well, we're done. So we've had so far. Let's recap then. We've had
Axos, Crinoids, Nymon, Elder Gods, Rutans, Draconians, Fendal, Web Planety,
and Cheetah People.
Yes.
Sutek. That's my final choice.
Use your powers for evil.
Evil? Your evil is my good. I am Sutek the Destroyer. Where I tread, I leave nothing but dust and darkness. I find that good.
Yep, there I can definitely see why. And
yeah, I mean, Pyramids of Mars is amazing, and the idea of this kind of the evil Egyptian god who's all powerful, and Gabriel Wolf's voice is fantastic. I know he came back as the voice of the Beast in Impossible Planet two-parter from the first David Tennant series.
He did, and he's done a two-part Tom Baker one where Sutek goes like all over the place. They do a nice little thing in that, actually. Where to start with, Sutek just is a disembodied voice because it's audio, and you just have Gabriel Wolf's voice, which is probably quite soothing, actually, I seem to remember.
Yeah, the two-parter they did a few years ago with Tom Baker and Sutek was really, really good. But as we talk about TV, I want to see Sutek back. Maybe I'm cheating here, thinking of the immortals here as well. But maybe some of the other Egyptian gods do it prop down. Maybe do a really, really good ancient Egyptian story, because I don't think we've really had that I can think of a really, really, really big grandiose ancient Egyptian story in Doctor Who.
Yeah, I don't think Egypt's done much either. You have Nefertiti at the beginning of, well, in Dinosaurs on the Spaceship, and it was like implied the Doctor's just done something. Egypt seen a little bit in Dalek's Master Plan. You see it a little bit in Pyramids of Mars to get that mythology. There is a sequel novel called The Sands of Time, which is possibly my favourite Fifth Doctor story there is, which has Sutek's sister, Nefertis.
Right.
She, and apparently, based on that book, basically, Sutek's one of the weaker ones. He's like the runt of the litter, almost. Yeah. So, you know.
But yeah, it's, you know, with the evil robotic mummies, I mean, Pyramids of Mars is a bloodbath anyway. Everyone dies in that story. But it's a really, really fantastic Fourth Doctor and Sarah story. Sutek is an absolutely amazing man. He looks fantastic. Maybe less so when he takes the mask off, but I still like the idea. But again, modern effects would absolutely nail that, I think.
Yeah, as Leela calls him in that audio, horse face.
Yes, absolutely.
And but, there's...
Yeah, I would say Pyramids Mars, apart from maybe a slightly naff little bit on actually on Mars at the very when the final part, it is a superbly executed story. It's one of my favourite stories, and I think Sutek made such an amazing presence. I would love to see Sutek brought back for Modern Doctor 2. Or, because he has been technically defeated and kind of trapped in time, we have one of the other Elder God siblings. You know, they've done stuff with ancient Egyptian gods in the Stargate series. So, you know, which sometimes work quite well, sometimes are, you know, restrained against budget. But I think, you know, if done well, they can be fantastic. I would love to see Doctor Who go full on ancient Egyptian influence with Egyptian gods and Sutek there back, voiced again by Gabriel Wolf. I think would be a really fantastic and really memorable villain to bring back.
Now, he's the one we should actually have at the series finale, killing the companion, yes, manipulating everything, not the Zabi.
No, I think the Zabi, I don't think, have that credibility. I think Sutek definitely has the credibility.
Yeah, and I know other media stories have, like, sort of gotten rid of, he's been aged to death. There's a 10th Doctor comic, which is basically set after that, so he does survive. And something that comic does, which I think a modern-day budget could as well, because in Pyramids of Mars, A, with how powerful the character is, and B, constraints of the 70s, it was just sitting on a chair the whole time. But with actual CGI, and who as it is now, with the budget we have, we could genuinely get more, get Sutek out and about doing things. Because in that comic, there's like a little cutaway 2 pages, where he basically just pops into space and just blows up an entire planet for no reason. And something like that on screen could really show it. Do that Sutek as like a 2-part finale, or maybe even something like, that's the last story of Shooting Atlas Doctor or something, versus Sutek.
Yeah. And the reason he's trapped on his pyramid in Mars, for most of Pyramids in Mars, because he's so powerful, if he gets out, that's it, it's game over. So I guess it's that balance between having someone so powerful they get out and cause all the havoc, and maybe him trying to get through again, maybe trying to influence other people, you know, you can build up to them to actually getting loose. And I think, yeah, I think Sutek, for me, is probably the best classic Doctor Who villain. Even up against things like Davros as well in Jezza Daleks. I think Sutek is such a memorable villain. And I love him. And I would love to see him translated into modern Doctor Who, modern special effects as well.
And I mean, after all we've seen with the Flux, basically, you can get Sutek out and about. He can wreak uncaused havoc, because the show actually likes to do that now. Whether the universe is fixed or not, we still have no idea.
Yes, maybe we'll find out on this continuing special.
Yeah, if it doesn't, but RTD2 is the universe full again, just assume they did what as Yor said and just rolled it back to before the Flux hit or something. I don't know.
I'm assuming so, yeah, or some other plot thing.
Because, yeah, that line was in The Vanquishers, so take it.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. So, I mean, that's been quite fun, just to kind of gush about some of our favourite monsters and maybe some of the less well-regarded ones too as well.
How dare you refer to the Nymon like that?
I think the Nymon is another one where it's...
Do not blaspheme the Nymon.
The Nymon is one where, again, the great idea, the execution... I mean, we're not talking Merkel level. Good idea, tell execution, but...
I still find it somewhat funnier we were all trolled into thinking the Merc was in Legend of the Sea Devils, and it so should have been the Merc, but Chibnall just went, no.
No, I thought it might be the Merc still.
No, it wasn't. They apparently named it as like the Hua Shen or something briefly. Oh. A sea devil refers to it like that. So unless they translated Merc into Chinese or something.
Maybe.
It's a cousin of the Merc.
It's Merc's cousin, yeah.
Yeah, his sister. Getting revenge for what happened to it in Warriors of the Deep.
Quite possibly. Okay, but yeah, it was a lot of fun. I hope you enjoyed that, and let us know what return of villains you'd like, what off villains you'd like to see as well, Doctor. You know, let us know on our Twitter accounts, and it'd be great to continue the discussion on there as well. So Ben, what have we got coming up in the next few podcasts?
Well, we're gonna look at Tomb of the Cybermen, Do we have a guest on that one?
We do. We have Tony Black on that one as well. So we're going to do our first, second Doctor story. We are going to do our Ninth Doctor story as well. We are definitely going to do Empty Child Dances. We're going to find time to watch it and re-digest it again.
In a few weeks, we'll be recording another podcast with Rob Valentine.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're doing that one about the influences
on Doctor Who, yeah.
As you mentioned, like Day of the Triffids with Seeds of Doom, stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And we talked all about the Eighth Doctor big finish last year. We're gonna share some love for old Sixy and his big finish redemption as well. So yeah, lots coming up as well. So yeah, that comes to the end of our podcast. You can find us on Crew TARDIS on Twitter and the TARDIS Crew on Instagram as well. Thanks for joining us, and remember, we are part of the We Beard This Podcast Network. Please subscribe to the TARDIS Crew, and please give us a rating of our podcast. We'd really love to hear your thoughts on that as well. Doctor Who is all we're discussing, so I'll give you a taste of what else you might have missed on the network in a moment. So join us again for the TARDIS Crew, because somewhere there's danger, somewhere there's injustice, somewhere else the tea is getting cold.
Elsewhere on We Made This.
Make it so. Star Trek Picard podcast.
Why do you even need to bring that up? You don't. We've done a story and you're just using that for the God. No, it's like no, I don't get it. I understand it. I understand Soongs are always going to be in some way related to the Kang story because of genetics and the stuff like that they've done. I get it, but to do that, and if it comes in season 3, if it's a main thing in season 3, then I'll hold judgment. If it doesn't get mentioned in season 3, then what was the point?
Pick a disc.
Guardian reading lefty, which
a bleeding heart is one of the phrases we use a lot here in the US. Like, he cares about the homeless.
Yeah.
I'm sort of shifting into my Limbo impersonation. Oh, he wants to house the homeless. What is he, a communist? Like, you know, that's not... maybe a little. but he's concerned with this. He's concerned with climate change. He's concerned with poverty. He's concerned with just general treatment of your fellow human beings. Like, I'm sure he resents having been subjected to trauma in his own life.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives him a great deal of sympathy, which I think is a good quality.
Third one, are the following names of hops, US space shuttles, or both?
Brilliant.
First one, Atlantis.
No, it's a US space shuttle, but is it a hop? I'm going to say it's just a US space shuttle.
Correct.
Good.
I got to get
Vesta 3 again.
I didn't know that was a space shuttle. Well, that's my poor knowledge, that is. second one, Galaxy.
I know that that's a hop because I've seen it in a pub recently. I don't know if it's a space shuttle, so I'm going to say both.
Just a hop, that one.
Oh, damn it.
Next one, Endeavour.
Check out all of these shows and more on the We Made This Podcast Network.